This is David Andrews. I'm the executive director of Michael Fields Agricultural Institute in East Troy, Wisconsin.
Tell me what Michael Fields Agricultural Institute is, what you guys do.
You know, Michael Fields is a small institute. We've got a budget of about $1.2 million, about a dozen staff. We have been here since 1984, 32 years. We were started by Christopher and Martina Mann and a local biodynamic farm wife called Ruth Zinniker. And we focus on organic and biodynamic agriculture.
And Zinniker was the first biodynamic farm in the United States.
Oldest biodynamic farm in the United States. It's just about a mile as the crow flies from the institute here. Our focus is in organic and biodynamic agriculture. It was always a dream of the founders that the institute would focus only on biodynamics. And we've done a little bit with biodynamics. We've done a whole lot more with organic. And quite frankly, it's probably because the audience is larger than biodynamics is certainly part of it. We do research, we do education, and we do policy work. Our policy work is done through an office in Madison, Wisconsin. And we do work at both the state and the federal level. Our director up there is in Washington, D.C., 7-8 times a year, mostly advocating for conservation-related programs.
And you outsource that lobbying effort, you might say, or is that actually at your office and your personnel?
It is actually at our office and our personnel that do that, yes. And Margaret's had assistants, associate directors, we call them, over the years. Right now, she's got a young African-American fellow that's just fantastic. She's been fortunate, but Margaret's very, very well connected. She has a reputation in the state of Wisconsin, if not nationally, as being the policy person working on sustainable agriculture issues in the state of Wisconsin. Margaret Crome. And her husband is, I believe he's chair of the department, agronomy department, perhaps, at UW-Madison. He is a soil scientist by training.
And she is a member of your staff.
And she is a member of our staff, one of the oldest members of our staff. Margaret's probably been here 20 years.
So who is Michael Fields? Why was that name Michael Fields?
You know, I've heard several different versions of that. I think, you know, I believe it came from Emerson College. Christopher Mann, our founder, one of the founders, his father taught at Emerson College. And I believe there's a place as part of Emerson College that is called Michael Fields. Now, I've also heard it's named after the Archangel Michael.
I also heard that one of the reasons you started to focus more on organic was because it was hard to find qualified people to teach biodynamics.
Yes, it is. It's hard to find qualified people to teach biodynamics. You know, 20 years ago, even less than that, 10 years ago, it was hard to find qualified people to teach organic agriculture. I moved up here from Iowa State University. Iowa State University has one full-time staff person responsible for organic agricultural research. One person. University of Madison, they did not have anyone focused strictly on organic agriculture until just recently. They hired a young lady because she was interested in organic, was doing organic research, and she was going to move to Colorado State University, and they finally created a position for her, and she is focused on organic agriculture. So, you know, it's been hard to get the universities to pay attention to organic agriculture, let alone biodynamics. So small institutes like Michael Fields have grown up to fill that void.
How would you describe the difference between the two?
The simple answer for people that don't understand biodynamics is to say that biodynamics is organic on steroids, or a higher degree of organic agriculture. Personally, I'd never heard of biodynamics before I joined Michael Fields in September 2010. But over the last 6 years, it's become evident to me there is a place for biodynamics, in large part because USDA administering the organic agriculture regulations, they're becoming more and more watered down. And I think that's going to happen as the Walmarts and the Targets and others get into organic agriculture. So how are you going to get a true organic product? Well, the easiest way is to take to the next level and get a biodynamic product. And I think that's going to help drive people towards biodynamics.
There are actually three levels of organic certification, right? One that basically says, yeah, I'm using all organic ingredients. And then there's another that says, I'm using mostly. And then there's another one that says, I'm using some. And it's actually even a different terminology, made with. But then the rest of the ingredients could be GMO for all that.
That's right, yep.
Some people look at biodynamics and say, boy, this is a bunch of hocus-pocus mysticism and all this other stuff, because they claim that even things like the phases of the moon will affect growing behavior of crops. But have you seen those results? Has there been any studies done to show that's the case, or is it all anecdotal?
As to Michael Fields, there have been studies done, but they were never published in peer-reviewed journals. And that's one thing in the last few years we've switched research directors. The longtime prior research director never published in peer-reviewed journals. And our current research director comes from a university background, and he knows the value of publishing in peer-reviewed journals. And, you know, he's anxious to set up biodynamic research studies on the preparations, comparing biodynamics to organic and conventional methods, you know, both in terms of food quality, but also in terms of economics. The problem we have is finding funding for biodynamic research. I mean, we used to have trouble finding funding for organic research, and now we've been able to do that. Now we're up against the wall of trying to find somebody that'll fund biodynamic research. And then the other part of that is we've got to make sure we do biodynamic research, you know, following correct, proper scientific methods and protocols. Because if we don't, then it won't be valid. And there's people out there that will certainly point that out if we don't follow a certain regime.
From what you see, do you think there's something to it?
You know, I am open to it. I think the Demeter standards, I think they're very valid, and they're the protocols we need to follow when we're doing biodynamic research. But I know others that are involved in the biodynamic community really believe there's spiritual aspects to biodynamics. Those are the ones I've got a little more question about. You just mentioned earlier planting by signs of the moon and that. You know, I happen to be married to a woman from Eastern Europe, from Romania. She didn't grow up in the village, but her father's family did. And she said, you know, this is beyond doubt that planting by the moon has an effect. Because she said, that's the way the villagers do it in Romania, and they've done it for that for generation after generation. So she said, obviously, there's something to that, or they wouldn't have continued to do it. And technically, they're not biodynamic, but they know there's a reason that you plant on certain days and not plant on others. So yes, I'm open to it, but I'm like everybody else. I'd like to see it proved as a valid methodology.
You have a technique here. What do you call it?
Chromatography.
Right. And did that come out of biodynamic practices? Is that something you developed to try to get some validation for stuff? Tell us about that.
I can't. I'm sorry. I don't know enough about chromatography to speak about it. Angie Curtis probably could. I can tell you, I have talked about chromatography with a soil scientist, a career soil scientist at Madison. He was associate dean of agriculture up there for a time. And he says, he doesn't downplay chromatography, but he says there are much more modern ways of doing soil testing without using chromatography.
But it is basically a way of measuring soil vitality, right? Can you say that?
That's what I've been told. Yes, that's what I've been told. And I was in Germany a year ago, spent some time with Chris for a couple weeks, attended the biodynamic conference. And we visited farms, and one of the farms we visited, the engineer at that farm, farm manager, so to speak, he took me up to his lab where he was doing chromatography. But you don't see it done much in the United States.
So, yeah, I'm going to be talking with Angie, and she actually has a little setup.
She does. That's the most recent place that I've seen it. Yeah, she does.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit more than reading tea leaves to it.
I agree. There may be something to it. I wish you had the opportunity to ask that to a university soil scientist that knew something of chromatography, because they could speak on it.
What have been your challenges here? Because I know when you came in, things were looking a little bleak, and you've been credited with really turning the institute around.
Yeah, I think, you know, financially, that was the challenge when I was hired. I think now we've moved beyond that. Certainly, we don't have a $10 million endowment like I'd like us to have. But financially, the institution is on its feet well enough that it really needs to be concerned more about where the institution is headed in terms of programming and its work, and not so much focused on the financials.
But you're very much dependent on grants, on donations.
We're dependent about a third of our operating money comes from grants. About another third comes from, actually, from USDA. They fund our corn research, and they did fund part of our education programs. We lost that grant. We're going to reapply for it. Hopefully, we'll get that back next year. And then the final third comes from individual donations. And it's not a... I just had a fund development committee meeting this morning. We have 70, 75 significant donors. But a good portion of those donors are large enough that they provide an income stream for us. When I first arrived, the staff here is very comfortable talking to organic farmers. And we work with organic farmers, so that's good that they are. But as I see it, the people we really need to be talking to are the conventional farmers out there, in particular a subset of those conventional farmers that are open-minded to other forms of agriculture. And I think there's a group out there. A year ago, we held the second or third statewide cover crop conference here in the state. And I contacted a gentleman that was using cover crops, a conventional farmer from Indiana. I had another connection to him, but several people said he'd make a great speaker because he was a big believer and user of cover crops. This guy farms between 4,000 and 4,500 acres. And when I started communicating with him, eventually we got around to him saying, you know, I'm really considering switching my operation over to organic.
Well, you know, one thing that convinces these guys is they can make more money.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Not only that, but a lot of them, in the case of Daniel D. Sutter in Indiana, in his case, he has seen this degradation of the soil. And he's also seen what, you know, if a farm's been farmed organically, what the soil looks like. And in his own words, he said, there's something there. There's a reason why their soil looks so much better than typical conventional farmer's soil.
So certainly the major focus on biodynamics is soil vitality. And originally, the organic movement started out with that as a base principle.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue because of monocropping, because of tilling,
right,
because of the use of even certain applications containing heavy metals and so on that are allowed.
Yep.
That soil vitality now has taken a back seat to yield.
Yes.
And to a certain extent, yep, to become more like conventional farmers in terms of practices,
mm-hmm,
even though there are, you know, a bunch of things that are forbidden, synthetic fertilizers and pesticides, mm-hmm, being the primary ones. But there are still pesticides and fertilizers used that are non-synthetic.
Right.
That at times might have a questionable effect on the health of the soil. So what's your sense of that?
I think you're absolutely right. To take it a step beyond the soil, if your soil's healthy, you're going to get healthy food products from that soil. And, of course, we as humans consume those food products. So healthy soils lead to healthy food, lead to healthy human beings and healthy communities. So it's very important.
A friend of mine who is kind of an insider on this told me that they've compared to the nutrition that was in food 50 years ago, it's probably 40% less. And then when you think about, okay, we have an obesity problem.
Yeah, right.
Well, you have to eat that much more to get the nutrition
that's right.
that you need.
Because we have a corn research program here at Michael Fields, you know, the large seed corn companies, Pioneer, Monsanto, Syngenta, they've pushed yields higher and higher. Well, the reason those yields have been crept up is because they've decreased the protein and the amino acid in the corn and increased starch. And you know, starch is, it's good for making ethanol, making fuel, but starch also makes people fat. And, the nutritional value compared to some of the corn varieties we're working on, I think our nutritional value in the kernel of our corn is 2/3 greater than what it is in the traditional crop.
Very significant. 2/3 greater.
Yeah, 2/3 greater. Yeah.
I enroll in Michael Fields, I guess, is there tuition?
It depends. We conduct, our education program conducts whole farm workshops. And there is a charge to attend those workshops.
But it's not like you come here for a year or so.
No, you usually come here. We usually do 24, 25 workshops a year. They're mostly over the winter months. They vary from 1 day to 3 day classes. Very seldom will be longer than it.
So give me an idea. I come, what am I going to see?
Depends what you want to study. You can cut, we've focused on, when I first arrived 6 years ago, we were very focused on production, how to grow a crop, how to fertilize a crop, how to control the weeds in using organic methods. We've moved into more how to market a crop, the business aspects of it. You know, knowing what it costs you to grow that crop so that you know what you need to get out of that crop to make a profit. And now we're getting more and more into market development because...
what I always say is the key to sustainability is creating markets for sustainable products.
That's right. It's too simplistic to say it, but any person, any farmer that knows agronomy can grow a crop, but you're never going to be a success just growing a crop. You've got to be able to market that crop, and marketing is way more important anymore than producing.
And as a result, there's been a fair amount of cooperatives formed as
that's right, yeah, very successful one here, Organic Valley in Wisconsin.
From the people that are coming to your courses, how would you rate the interest in organic and alternative farming compared to 10 years ago? Do you see it growing? And who are the people that you see? Is there a different demographic now coming to your courses?
Yes and no. I think 10 years ago, we had a lot of young, sometimes urban, they were of urban origins, coming to our courses. Now we've got that same group of young, idealistic people that want to begin farming. But we've got a new demographic in the last few years, and that's the person that is 45 to 55 years old. And this is a group of people we're particularly excited about because they come with some financial backing. They've been a success in another field. They've got some income that they can devote to starting farming. And they don't want to start farming conventionally. They want to, grow food that they can eat, that's good for society, that type of thing.
And is it they want to build a commercial farm or something larger? Or is this to basically have gardens in the backyard?
I think a little bit of both. I think a little bit of both. It's just exciting to see, you know, the young people, not only do they sometimes need to learn the agronomy part of it and get good at controlling weeds and applying fertilizer, but they've also got to get good at creating a business plan that works for them. And they come usually with little resources, financial resources. This older farmer that's now ready for a second career, they come with maybe not the knowledge, but they come with enough financing that they can afford to make mistakes and still
and
continue.
Life experiences.
Yeah, and life experiences. You're
so
right.
You describe some of these younger folks as idealistic. Was that a euphemism for naive?
So to speak. Yeah, I really think you're right. Yeah.
So they don't know what they're really getting into, what it's going to take.
They don't realize the commitment to it. And a lot of times I'm talking about time commitment. You don't know how many young people I've ran into that are starting farming that, you know, July 4th weekend's coming up and they're going to go spend the weekend with their family somewhere. Well, if you're a garden farming and you've got crops rotting in the field, you know, you might have to work those holiday weekends.
Right. So what I hear is that they're surprised at how hard the work is and how much work there is.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
How many other places are there like this in the country? Do you have a sense of that?
You know, one time I assigned our education director, this was shortly after I arrived, to research that. And somewhere around there is probably a list. But you know, there's probably more than I think there are, but I think you're talking about dozens and not hundreds. And, you know, it just depends. You know, there's Michael Fields, there's Rodale, that are both very well known. There's some very successful biodynamic operations, such as Hawthorne Valley in New York. You know, I can't give you a very good answer on that because I can't really name how many there are, but I just have a sense that there's very few. I mean,
are there more courses at universities now?
You know, there's being more courses created. I know that in particular at Iowa State and at UW-Madison, there's more courses being created on organic production. I'm not sure about the marketing, but I suspect marketing as well. And they're doing that because of the growth in organic agriculture.
What is your feelings on GMOs?
I don't think GMOs are good. The thing that concerns me about GMOs isn't so much the genetic breeding that goes on. It just concerns me that most GMOs are developed so that they can have chemicals applied to them. And that's what bothers me. It's not the breeding aspect of it so much as it is that we're creating plants that can tolerate a certain amount of herbicide. You know, I heard recently Monsanto was buying a large vegetable company and they were going to create these vegetable plants that could tolerate glyphosate, Roundup. And, you know, that's the problem with GMOs is they're being developed to, you know, I'm sure there's other aspects of them that aren't good.
I wouldn't exactly call it a genetic breeding program. I mean, the way that the guys make hybrid seeds and even new varieties of stuff or new varieties of fruit is very, very different than going in and splicing genes.
Yes,
from
that's
other.
It is very different
species.
Yeah, yeah,
and also families and kingdoms.
Yes, right, right.
So
I just saw my first advertisement the other day for a company in South Korea that were create a clone of your dog. And, you know, that's the scary part of genomics because we may be headed in that direction.
So what are your plans? Because I know that you're going to be moving on from here.
Yeah, I intend to in theory, retire sometime between now and next May. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I know I'm moving back a little closer to home. I have a farm in Iowa. But, you know, I've thought about setting up a farm consulting service having to do with organic agriculture. I'm not sure I know enough about biodynamics to get into offering consulting on that. But I'm well acquainted with some large farm management companies, and I spoke with one, well, it's been 4 or 5 years ago, shortly after I took this position, and said, you know, how often do you work with organic farms? And this guy, Hertz Farm Management, Randy Hertz, one of the sons of the founder, said, go to it. He said, we don't want to mess with organic farms.
So you could be a division of the company specializing in that.
You know, I never thought about that. I really thought about developing my own LLC and sort of working at the, you know, my own pace. If you work for somebody like Hertz or another farm management company, you won't work at your own pace, you'll work at their pace. But I think there's a lot of interest. I know there's a lot of interest just from my position here. You know, we get calls all the time from, usually it's the children of farmland owners, that they're going to be, or they have inherited this farmland from their parents, and they don't want it farmed conventionally anymore. They want it farmed in some other more sustainable way. And they don't have a background in agriculture. They moved off the farm as a child, and they need advice.
Do they actually want to farm it, or they want someone to farm it?
A little of both. Yeah, a little of both. Some of them actually want to operate it themselves. Others want to find a farmer that'll farm it the way they want it farmed. I just recently had a call. I met this fella almost 2 years ago at Louisville, the Biodynamic Conference. And he lives in Vermont, and he had, at that time, he had 2 farms in Texas and 3 farms in Iowa. I know he still has the farms in Iowa. And those farms actually are being farmed organic, but his tenants are both in their 70s now. And they're ready to retire, and they want to transition to somebody younger, but they're having trouble finding somebody younger that wants to take it over. And I think there's a lot of that kind of thing going on out there, where there are opportunities where somebody just needs to walk them through the steps that they need to take.
I know that Chris Mann has 2 farms that he basically is looking for tenants for right here.
Yeah.
One's a dairy farm, could be potentially a combination dairy beef farm.
Yep.
Yeah, it's an agricultural operation.
And they've had a hard time finding people.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are opportunities out there, like you said. There.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about the Institute that you'd like folks to know?
I think that, you know, one of the issues when I arrived, besides the finances, was we weren't, you know, for an institute that had been in the community almost 30 years, we were very, even in the community, didn't know what we did here. And we've really worked the last few years hosting chamber dinners, working with the schools. We just had a group of school kids in here recently. But even the East Troy School District uses this as a training area for their teachers, because we've got some technology out here that they don't have. And I think all of those help. Anytime we can bring the community in here to see what we're doing, it takes care of some misconceptions they might have about the Institute. And I really, really hope as the Institute continues to grow that they work more and more at bringing people in. Right now we have a group here from Chicago. They're renting the house over here on the corner. They're going to be here for a month, and there's going to be, I don't know, 25, 30 people come up from Chicago. There are artists of some kind. And, you know, by bringing those types of groups in here, all of a sudden people in Chicago begin to realize that there is an institute north of the border, not very far, that is doing the kind of work that needs to be done.
I know at one point you were investigating creating a economically viable farm that could possibly serve also as a source of ongoing revenue for the efforts here.
Yeah, actually, we've made some real progress in the last few years. 3 years ago, we had a woman from Whitewater, 70 miles down the road, that donated her farm in Indiana to us. We're in the process of transitioning that farm to organic, and it should become certified late this month or early August. More recently, we purchased a 205-acre property northeast of here, about 4 or 5 miles. And that farm, the plan for it is for it to become a biodynamic demonstration farm, research and demonstration farm.
What would be wonderful, I think, for your students is, and for the Institute, is to say, we're going to concentrate more on helping you become successful business people. Oh, and by the way, we've got a successful farm right here.
Yes, right. Yeah, I think you couldn't be more on target. Yeah, good suggestion.
If you had your crystal ball, what is agriculture in this country going to look like 10 years?
10 years from now, there's probably going to be more organic and there's going to be more biodynamic farms out there. I think the difference we'll really see is 40, 50 years from now, where there is very little conventional agriculture as we understand it today. And people have decided, you know, they need to pay attention to what they eat. They need to purchase things local. I think we'll see a drastic change. I really think the conventional farming, the industrial agricultural model that is huge right now, is a real small blip on the continuum of how we develop and how we grow our food. And I don't think it's going to be looked back upon as a very favorable blip in that continuum.
You know, the ultimate vision of the transhumanists and so on is not really to grow food at all, but to basically synthesize it from the elements.
Is that right?
Yeah. And so
that doesn't sound like near as much fun.
Well, it's fun for somebody.
Yes, right.
And so it'll be interesting to see how that very powerful, well-funded, with very good PR.
Yeah.
And probably in some ways represents not only the corporatocracy, but the deep state to a certain extent. Will fare 40 years from now compared to folks that want something authentic that comes from the soil.
Yeah. Hard telling. I doubt if I'm going to be around to see that, but maybe in another life.
Well, transhumans are doing their job, they'll keep you going for another 100 years.
Yeah. Or freeze me and bring me back.
Anything else you'd like to share with us?
I wouldn't say my work's done here, but it's certainly on a glide path to where I'll walk away and turn this over to somebody else.
Do you know who that is yet?
No. In fact, I think I gave the board a year to find somebody, and they've taken me up on it because I told them in April I was leaving, and they haven't advertised the job yet in July. Hopefully that's going to happen in August. You know.
So there's an opportunity right here at Michael Fields.
Yes, there is.